Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in the space flight from around the globe. And now with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Greetings, everyone, from Florida's Space Coast, where no matter what you've heard during the past few days, we still do have a very active space program going on, with no less than two launches scheduled this week. This is the February 6th, 2010 edition of Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. I am Jim Behnke, and we do have a full program planned for you today on this Super Bowl weekend. 321-768-1240 is the number to join us from anywhere in the nation. Local AT&T wireless customers can punch in *1240 on their cellular phones and get right here to the studio. It's a free phone call. And those of you listening online at WMMBAM.com, well, send us some email if you have a question or comment. The address today, spacetalking@AOL.com. Well, first things first, let's get you up to date. Spatial Endeavour remains scheduled for launch from the Kennedy Space Center early tomorrow morning at 4:39 a.m. In fact, be precise, 4:39 and 50 seconds a.m. Eastern Standard Time. So far, so good in terms of the countdown. The weather forecast still optimistic at 80% go. Winds are a concern. And we'll talk more and get an update from our friend Tracy Yates at United Space Alliance after we take our break at the bottom of the hour. And then assuming that Endeavour does get off the ground on its first try tomorrow morning, Sunday morning, then on Wednesday morning at 10:30 Eastern Time in the morning, again, a United Launch Alliance Atlas V rocket is poised to carry NASA's Solar Dynamics Observatory into space, be flying a mission to study the sun. The launch to take place from Complex 41 at Cape Canaveral Air Force Station. So the Space Coast remains a busy place. And the International Space Station, by the way, remains a busy place as well. The crew up there received another visit from a Russian Progress freighter this past week. And, of course, looking ahead, we still have four more shuttle missions to fly after Endeavour. And there is no shortage of activity still ahead at Cape Canaveral at the air station, including the first flight of the Falcon 9 later this spring, which we're greatly anticipating. But, of course, there is, amongst all of that, the unrest here as we contemplate the future, as laid out by the release of President Obama's budget and concerns about what it means for NASA and our space program. It has been a tough week along the Space Coast listening to some of this. And then, of course, let me just say I'm still trying to sort all of this out in my own head and in my own heart. Conclusions are still, I think, a few days and weeks away yet as we watch this happening. But I do think that there's a lot of good in the proposal for NASA. And again, it is only just that, a proposal, until Congress passes a budget and comes to some kind of resolution here. We're not going to know exactly what course we're on. There's still chances to change things. I'm not sure still yet how to react over the outright cancellation of Constellation, whether you loved the Ares 1 rocket or not, maybe thought it was a lemon. What you may have believed about going back to the moon instead of on to Mars or some other destination. In any case, Constellation, to me, and I think to a lot of folks, was a tangible representation of a vision that said we as a nation were definitely heading out into the solar system. It's that vision piece with the cancellation of Constellation that I'm still wrestling with in terms of this new direction. And again, I think I'm going to be patient a little while longer, see what happens as the dust begins to settle, and Congress thinks this through and reacts in the way that they do. But in the meantime, let me make a couple of points here that come to mind kind of as a high level here. First, and this is what's been gnawing at me, at least for the last day or so, and it's certainly been a problem throughout the history of our space program. It's the fact that we've played out this scene before, or at least the events that led to this scene, to led to this decision, It's happened way too often. You know, before we can find any compromise in this new direction, whether we can fund any new mandate, whether we can increase public awareness and support of these new goals, you know, we have to stop repeating this same vicious political budget circle when funding a program, new program or otherwise. And I'm concerned that's something that, you know, we can't do as a nation, but we need to. And maybe now is the time to make this shift. I think here's what we need to fix. And tell me, I've written this out. Let me tell you if this sounds familiar to you. Just follow me on this. Visionary leader proposes cool space technology that will change everything for the better and promises full support. Congress says, great idea. We love it. It's about time we had a leader, daring and bold. Space guys sing happy days are here again. In the next budget, visionary leader says, oops, economy stinks, and we had to make some tough choices. We can't give cool space technology as much attention as we had first hoped. Then Congress says cool space technology must be protected. Asks space guys, what's the deal? Space guys must pretend to support leader and tell Congress they can make do with less. Congress shrugs, passes budget, saying we had to make some tough choices. During next year, space guys work on cool new space technology, run into problems, and then find ways to make technology even cooler. But this will take longer and cost more money because new friends are needed in the neighborhood to make it work. Congress likes having lots of friends in big neighborhoods. A year passes, and it is budget time again. Space guys tell leader what they need. Leader tells space guys we must make tough choices. Space guys do not complain because leader is boss. Later, Congress shrugs, passes budget, saying we had to make some tough choices. Several years later, a new leader shows up and doesn't think the cool space technology is that cool. It has cost a lot of money, is behind schedule, and so many people on the Space Guys Look website say it won't work, and they can't all be wrong. Visionary leader proposes new cool space technology that will change everything for the better and promises full support. Congress says, great idea. We love it. It's about time we had a leader, daring and bold. Space guys sing happy days are here again. Does that sound familiar? Sad? You know, I think while this is certainly, you can say, well, that's the story of Constellation, you know, it does happen to be the exact same story that has played out so many times for programs like, and you know, boy, you can just bang them off. The X-33 reusable launch vehicle. Spent a ton of money and time. Canceled. The Space Launch Initiative. Remember any of that? Remember the acronym SLI? This was going to be we're going to develop a whole new line of rockets. It was going to change the way we get into orbit and back and get rid of those old things that we used to, you know, that were still flying. Canceled. The National Aerospace Plane, our so-called Orion Express, hypersonic airliners from New York to Tokyo in 45 minutes. Lots of work, tons of money spent by the Air Force and NASA. Hardware built, tested, tremendous investment in technology, canceled. Even Project Apollo, in some ways, I think, fits into this mold. Just think of what we might have accomplished during the 1970s and 80s if we still had the Saturn V available. Well, this pattern has to be disrupted. We have to figure out a way to deal with stable, long-range funding for a program. And the second thing I want to say really quick is I remain optimistic about the future of the program. Love it or hate it, the president's plans does include more money for NASA, and it shows this nation continues to believe spaceflight is a worthwhile investment. And I continue to believe that humans are destined to be in space. Well, we're going to talk more about this topic next week. For now, we're going to put it behind us and talk about some fun things still ahead. Are you ready for some football? Well, coming back, we're going to have astronaut Leland Melvin join us. This is Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Banky, and you're listening to WMMB.
With everything you need to know about America's space program, here is Jim Behnke.
Did I actually hear that commercial about Black Cow? I'm going to go back and listen to the tape on that one. Welcome back to Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. 321-768-1240 is the number to call to join me today with your questions or comments. Of course, you can send email anytime to spacetalking@aol.com. Well, as you regular listeners know, I love football. And during this past season, it's been fun to chat about the NFL and my Minnesota Vikings, even when they did lose at the end. And on this show, of course, dedicated to the space program, and I haven't taken too much grief from anyone about the fact of mixing a little football with space from time to time. In fact, there has been a time or two when what I said about the Vikings was the only thing someone remembered about the show the next day. I don't know what that says about my topics, but it's been fun. And it is with great joy that on this Super Bowl weekend, I can legitimately combine my two passions of space and football by welcoming to the program a veteran of two space shuttle missions and the Detroit Lions pick in the 11th round of the 1986 NFL draft. Current astronaut Leland Melvin joins us by phone from Houston. Leland, it's good to talk to you again, sir.
Hey, Jim, good to talk to you. How you doing?
We're doing great. Counting down to a launch. It's always an exciting thing around here, and I assume you're monitoring things from Houston?
I am, and I'm looking forward to seeing two more of my classmates get to space, and both for the second time, Zambo and George Zamka, the commander, and Nick Patrick. So it's going to be a good day for early morning spaceflight.
And then, of course, here at the Kennedy Space Center, we're proud of our own Kay Hire, which I guess they call KSC now Kay's Space Center. So that's going to be fun, too. Well, let's get into it. You know, your astronaut career has been closely tied to NASA's education program because you do have such a great story to tell, you know, students about your journey from the NFL to NASA and certainly emphasizing the importance of a good education. So let's tell the folks, go ahead and take us through the highlights of your story, you know, beginning with that all-important homecoming game at Heritage High in Lynchburg, Virginia.
Oh, I tell that story all the time because it's just, you know, it's all about perseverance. I mean, my homecoming game, senior year, line up on the sideline, running down the sideline for a touchdown pass, looking the ball into my hands, knowing that I've already caught it, but I didn't catch it. I dropped it.
Yep.
And unbeknownst to me, there was a college scout up in the stands who saw me drop a touchdown pass. He's now walking out of the stadium, and my coach believed in me. Jimmy Green called me to the sideline, said, "Leland, get in there and catch that pass." And so this time, you know, as I'm running down the field, I'm praying this ball into my hands, end up in the end zone, catch the ball, we win the game, and the scout hears the crowd from the from his exit of the stadium,
yeah.
And he turns around and sees me in the end zone and says, well, maybe this guy can play for us. So, you know, that's something that I've always looked back on, and any failures, anything that I've done, I've said, you know, I dropped the ball and I caught it, and look what happened. So we always have to ensure that we keep our head up. Even with the space program now, we have, you know, some people think there's lots of uncertainty. No, we don't know where we're going, but we got to keep moving forward. We've got the funding, as you mentioned. I just heard that in your mm-hmm. in your preview, but we got to just keep going and make the best of it.
So from Lynchburg, then of course you went and played ball in college,
right? Played at the University of Richmond for 4 years, and I was a chemistry major there. And I never really went to many practices because of chemistry lab, so I got the name Larry Lab from all my mm-hmm. from all my colleagues. But went there, and then we did well my last 2 years there. We went from 0-10 my freshman year to 3-8 and 8-5, and went to the playoffs and did really well. And so college scouts came down and timed me, and I ended up getting drafted in the 11th round to the Detroit Lions.
Yes.
So that was a big shock to me, a kid who never thought that he would be playing college football, no doubt playing, you know, getting a chance to play in the NFL.
Yeah, and playing as a wide receiver. And then, of course, you were very quickly moved over to the Dallas Cowboys. And as I recall, I think from the story when you first told it to me, you guys were showing off for the owner or the coach or something, and that's when you finally pulled your hamstring?
What happened, I was with Danny White. I was stretching because I was coming off of the hamstring injury from the Detroit Lions, and Dallas picked me up for the next season, and I was out there stretching, and Danny said, "Hey, let's go you know, catch some balls. I said, well, let's do a half speed out. And he says, okay. So Tom Landry walks on the field. Danny's trying to keep his job. So he sees Tom. I see Tom. And I'm, you know, lined out as a wide receiver getting ready to run this half speed 10-yard out, which is now changed by an audible to take it to the house bomb.
Right.
And I ended up pulling the leg again, and that was pretty much the end of my football career. But before, you know, after I left Detroit, a professor had told me I should maybe talk to a gentleman at the University of Virginia in material science engineering. And I, you know, I listened to him. I went there, and I started grad school before going to Dallas. So that allowed me, after getting cut from Dallas, to just go right back to grad school at the University of Virginia and become a material science engineer.
And then that's where one thing leads to the next, and you're in Houston, and you're flying.
You never know what's going to happen. So, you know, having that solid foundation in education, you always have an opportunity, always have a chance. And both of my parents were middle school teachers that, you know, always instilled in me that education was one of the most important things you could ever have.
And it's a very special story, of course, because, you know, kids, guys, certainly young men, you know, you dream of playing in the NFL, you know, and then you also dream of being an astronaut, and you get a chance to do both. And when you're telling this story to these kids and you're in the classroom, you know, what's their sense of wonder about all this and their reaction to that story?
Well, you know, at first, all kids feel like they're invincible. They're never going to get hurt. You know, and they're always going to be the ones to make it to the NFL, the NBA, or be a rap star or whatever. And I tell them, I said, you know, you got to have that education because you never know what's going to happen. And in my case, you know, I pulled my hamstring. I couldn't play anymore. So I went straight back to grad school, worked for NASA for 10 years, and then became an astronaut. And they kind of, you know, when you talk to them, they're kind of not affected by your story, but then the coolness factor goes up when they hear that you've been in the NFL. So
mm-hmm.
Now they listen, and then they say, well, maybe if that happened to him, maybe that could happen to me, and maybe I should study and get better grades.
And one of the things that I wonder, Leland, and I don't even know if I'm going to phrase this question right or am I going to be able to express it correctly, but you know, you were very involved in education before you flew, and you went and did a lot of classroom work. And then, of course, when you go up after that first time and you come back with that experience, you know, everyone I've talked to, you know, I'm sure your outlook on things, whatever they are, changed in somewhat. And I'm wondering, when you go back into the classroom with this story, after you've actually made that first space flight, and maybe even more after the second space flight, is there a change? Do you have a greater appreciation, a greater sense of what's been accomplished?
I think, you know, after my first space flight, I went up there. We installed Columbus, you know, a new research laboratory, and for the European Space Agency, and I felt this big sense of accomplishment. But I think, you know, all the technical stuff aside, we were there with African-American, Asian-American, first female commander in Peggy Whitson, Russians, Germans, I mean, just French, the whole gamut of people. And we, the first night we got to the space station, Peggy invited us over to dinner over in the service module.
Mm-hmm.
So we're sitting around this table having dinner. We're all sharing and eating dinner, and we are listening to music. And it's like you're in someone's home. It's like you're part of a family. And this is a family that's going 17,500 miles per hour, but it's a family of the entire planet. And I just wish that everyone could have the opportunity to experience that, because it does change you. It makes you feel so connected to the planet as you see all of the planet, you know, going around every 90 minutes. And it's just, it's transformative. And I just wish everyone could get that opportunity.
And then I assume then, as you went back in the classroom, that's become part of your message now, where you didn't have that experience before, which makes, again, your story all the more valuable.
Well, what's funny is when you go into the classroom to talk before you've flown in space, a lot of the kids say, well, you're not really an astronaut, because don't astronauts fly in space?
I want a real astronaut. I want John Glenn. Well, and now you've been up there twice, and again, I just think it's the most remarkable story. So let's talk about a little bit more about the space flights themselves, and we're going to get, by the way, to the whole NFL thing in terms of the coin and the mementos that you flew, you know, after we do this break here coming up.
Okay.
But let's talk a little bit about the flights themselves. I mean, let's ask the classic astronaut questions. What was it like up there? You mentioned the camaraderie and the experience there, but, you know, are there games to play as a former NFL guy? Did you go for the long ball down the tunnel?
Well, I don't know if you've seen any of the video from space, but we staged a few little games. We had a Redskins jersey. I think Bobby Satcher had a Doug Williams jersey, and I had a jersey from Andre Johnson from the Texans on my second flight.
Yeah.
And so we were over in the service module playing. We had a football from the Pro Football Hall of Fame, so we were throwing the ball and doing a little tackling and catching. And then we had a skit where Butch Wilmore, the pilot, he was a linebacker at Tennessee Tech. And so I let him hit me and show on camera that, you know, he could take me out. But, you know, he really couldn't do that in real life.
Zero-G tackling, forever action is an equal opposite reaction.
Exactly.
You know.
But if you have this collision and then you stay connected, you're moving as one piece through the station. It's this connected piece.
It gives a whole new meaning to a penalty for holding.
Exactly.
Oh, that's absolutely fantastic. Well, look, you know, it is time to take a little pause here. We've got a little 5-minute built-in hold here at the bottom of the hour, and so we'll do that when we come back. After getting caught up with the news, weather, and sports, we'll have more with 2-time shuttle astronaut Leland Melvin. Again, reminding you, give us a call, 321-768-1240. If you have any questions or comments for Leland, we're going to talk more football after we take this break. But again, this is Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation, trust, performance you can count on. I'm Jim Behnke, and you're listening to WMMB.
And now back to Space Talk on WMMB.
And welcome back to this second half of Space Talk on WMMB, brought to you by United Space Alliance. 321-768-1240, the number to call, *1240 for AT&T wireless customers along the Space Coast. Get a hold of us. Also by sending email, spacetalking@AOL.com. During the week, you can follow along with what we're doing and planning and saying by following us on Twitter at the username of Space Talking. Today's program, of course, can be heard live online right now, every week as well, at WMMBAM.com. And, of course, again, go to that website, WMMBAM.com, keywords Space Talk, to find out what's going on with our webpage there. And you can also download recording of today's program during the week. Before we continue with astronaut Leland Melvin in Houston, we're going to just do a quick check-in with Tracy Yates from United Space Alliance here at the Cape for an update on plans to launch Endeavour tomorrow morning. Tracy, hi.
Hi, Jim. How are you doing?
Good. How's it look?
So far, so good. It's windy out there, but that hasn't hampered things yet. They rolled back the rotating surface structure this morning. The fuel cell activation is in work right now, and in about 3 hours, the crew's going to wake up and start to get ready. A few hours later, at about 7, we're going to start filling the external fuel tank with liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen. That takes a little more than 2 hours, so things are going very smoothly, and the latest weather forecast is staying at 80% go.
So I suppose with an early morning launch, everyone basically heading to bed here pretty soon?
Yeah. For example, the folks at the press site where I work have all gone home to try to take a nap, and everybody will start to roll back in late this evening. So let's keep fingers crossed that things proceed as smoothly as they have.
Good, good. Well, I know we're going to check in during our live launch coverage tomorrow morning with your boss, Jeff Carr.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll get an update then as well. And, of course, our coverage will begin at 4 in the morning here on WMMB. Tracy, good luck with the launch. Get some sleep, and let's hope it gets off the ground on time.
I agree. Fingers crossed. I'm sure we have a lot of confidence in this team to get it done. And we'll talk to you in the morning.
Good.
Bye-bye.
So, Tracy Yates with a quick update. And let's go right back to astronaut Leland Melvin in Houston. And, again, Leland, you heard everything looking good so far. What do you normally, as an astronaut, do you go into mission control? Do you guys all gather? Do you just watch from home? What's the usual drill?
I think it just depends on who's supporting the mission. Some people are supporting in mission control. Some are in our contingency action center at the in the astronaut office, and I probably will watch it from home.
Well, good. Now let's talk. Let's go back to your spaceflight experience, and then I want to get into some NFL stuff. But one of the things I'm always curious about with astronauts, when after they've flown a couple of times, is you went up, you made your first flight, and you had a lot of experiences. And I'm wondering, first of all, what was the most memorable sensation of that first flight? Maybe you've already mentioned it, but then when you anticipated going back the second time, what were you most looking forward to doing or experiencing on that second flight?
You know, I think as a second time flyer, I was there to be more of a mentor for the first time flyers. Mm. And Butch Wilmore, Randy Bresnik, and Bobby were doing some robotics, and I was kind of mentoring them with the robotics and just making sure that, you know, their experience was, you know, a great experience like I had. And so I think that was a big part of this, and just, you know, kind of helping with the overall tone of the mission, you know, having that experience with Scorch and Mike would just kind of help set the tone for how everything would work out, and it worked out great.
So no special foods to try, no special maneuvers, any place you wanted to stare out the window?
Well, you know, we did have the Super Bowl coin that we flipped around and had a little video with that. And I think I tried to get some more pictures of places that I didn't take the first time or places that were clouded over. And, you know, I wanted to get my hometown, which I was not able to get because it was clouded over, but more images and just, you know, just enjoying that experience with new colleagues in space.
And funny you should mention the Super Bowl coin. So let's talk about that story because, Leland, I'm not sure you're aware of it, but there's been a lot of activity here in Melbourne because of that coin. I've been involved in that story, and we want to talk about it a little bit because I think it's kind of neat. Let's start with, first of all, the idea of flying something for the Hall of Fame for the NFL, which I would guess originated from you, and you gathered some stuff and made some connections, or how did that work out?
Well, actually, one of our publicists in the astronaut office, Dana Davis, contacted Joe Horrigan and the people at the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and they were able to send a football. And she contacted the Texans to get the Andre Johnson jersey, and then the Super Bowl in turn to get the coin.
Right.
And so we thought it would be, you know, great to have maybe, you know, flip a coin and make a little video clip of that because it's something that hadn't been done before. And with my connection, you know, in the NFL we talked about earlier, I just thought the timing would be perfect.
And did you know going into it that or was your hope that it would get used as the coin at the Super Bowl?
Yeah, we were hoping that because, you know, what better way to get kids? You have this huge audience there at the Super Bowl, and so many kids are watching, and they're going to see that this coin had flown in space and was a former, you know, potential NFL player who's now an astronaut. So what better way to reach out to kids and let them know that, you know, if that first career doesn't work, you can have a backup plan, and my backup plan was then to become an astronaut.
So then it was probably, what, a week ago Wednesday that you guys were in Canton?
Right, and we went up, and Steve Perry, the executive director, with Joe Horrigan and Dave DeFelice from NASA, Glenn, we all went there, and we talked to a number of kids and adults in their conference room there, and we showed the jerseys that I'd taken up on the STS-122 flight last year, and I presented those back to the Hall of Fame, as well as the Hall of Fame football, and then we also showed the coin.
Now, while you were there, did you happen to meet a volunteer by the name of Betty, 92-year-old woman?
Betty. I probably did, but I don't recall exactly.
And I know she normally works Thursday morning. I met her. She's an incredible woman, and there's a whole other story involved there, but I was curious. So now, the rest of the story. The news that you were going to be at the Hall of Fame and do this presentation, of course, NASA put the news release out. One of the local TV stations here aired the program and the news bit, and it was seen by a woman named Phyllis Hamilton, who works at the Highland Mint here in Melbourne, where your coin was minted.
Oh, wow.
Okay, good. This is news to you. All right, so this is fun. So Phyllis happens to be the mother of a young lady that I used to teach at church, and so we knew each other. And she calls up, and Michael Cott, who's the president of the Highland Mint, wanted to know where the coin came from. Let's actually. I got Michael Cott on the phone. Michael Cott, president of the Highland Mint. First of all, welcome to Space Talk.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Good, Michael. So it was like Wednesday. They're making the pitch, and you weren't sure where the coin came from or how they got the coin. Isn't that the fact?
Well, what ended up happening, last August, you know, for the past 20 years, we've been making the coin that they flipped for the Super Bowl. And last August, someone from the NFL contacted us and said they wanted us to make the facsimile, even though the Super Bowl coin, to bring up into space. And, you know, we've been using the same design every year. Like, the back of the coin has the Super Bowl logo, and the front of the coin has the Vince Lombardi trophy, and then the two helmets with the logos and the team names playing in the Super Bowl.
So
maybe it was August. You know, we made the coin obviously without the team names or their logos on the helmets, and we sent it to Houston. And quite honestly, we forgot all about it.
And
you mentioned to us that she read, you know, an Associated Press story, saying that you know, the coin went up in space is being presented in Canton. It's going to be used for the flip.
Right, and so now it's now up in the Hall of Fame. Leland, you guys have presented this to it. You guys are probably then on your way back to Houston. We get a call from actually I get a call from Phyllis, and then Michael and I got in touch with each other. And the question was, okay, here you got this coin with two blank helmets. Can we still get the teams etched onto the engraved onto the coin? And so because of all these connections that we have, and I had known Joe Horgan as well, we were able to get the two of them together, Joe and Michael's groups together, and the coin came down. Michael, you're going to help me last Friday, and you were able to do a quick turnaround and get that thing engraved. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Yes, you know, we thanks to your hands, we worked together with the Hall, and they actually flew someone down to Melbourne. Like, they wouldn't trust any couriers or anything, so he flew down. We engraved the two teams' names and their logos into the helmets, and then he got back on the plane, went back to Canton.
And then and now, of course, it has since gone. And Michael, remind me now, the side that the helmets are on, is that considered heads or tails?
So that's considered heads.
That's considered heads with the helmets on it. So Leland, what we're hoping for, of course, is that when they flip the coin tomorrow night, it will come up heads, and they'll do a nice close-up TV view of the camera looking down on the coin on the field, and that'll be your ultimate payoff right there.
That will be. And hopefully, I think we had some video that we shot in space that's supposed to be played there also. We had a coin toss with Jeff Williams. He represented the Army and the AFC, and Charlie Hobaugh, a Navy guy, represented the NFC. And so we flipped the coin, and it went away, so we had to do rocks, paper, and scissors to decide who would get the coin toss.
Who would do that? That's incredible. So it all worked out, as it turns out, and I know that the coin is going to make it back to the Hall of Fame, and of course, your jerseys in football are still there. So it was pretty neat the way it all worked out, and Michael, again, thanks for your involvement and making that happen. I think that was quick thinking and quick movement, and we were able to get it done, and have our own little piece of history. And I think the neatest thing about this whole thing is that if Endeavor does make it off the ground tomorrow morning, you've got... When it makes it off the ground. I'm sorry, it's the old journalist to me. When it makes it off the ground on time at 4:39 and 50 seconds, it's going to be seen by all this huge audience down in Miami, and then they're going to go down and flip a coin that flew in space, and it just couldn't be more perfect. In fact, I was listening to the NFL radio on Sirius on the way over here to the studio, and they were already talking down there about the fact there was going to be this NASA launch up in Melbourne. Well, they didn't get all the facts right, but there was going to be this NASA launch and that everyone would be able to see it, so
that's
pretty
awesome.
Cool. All right. Well, Michael, thanks for being with us. Leland, if you can just stand by for just one more minute, we got a couple more questions for you and one that just came in via email that we want to talk about the future and deal with a little bit about the budget issue, just to give you an advance warning on that. So we're going to take our final break here. And then when we come back, we'll have the last few words with Leland Melvin and give you a little update about what's going to happen next week here on Space Talk. So once again, stay tuned. We'll be back in just a moment.
This is Space Talk with Jim Behnke.
Welcome back as we begin our final segment of today's Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. And first, I want to take a quick 30 seconds to let you know that Brevard Community College will be featuring the lecture Running Rings Around Saturn, the Cassini Mission, on Friday, February 12th at 7 p.m. in the COCO Campus Planetarium and Observatory. Dr. John Colwell, a professor of physics at the University of Central Florida, will discuss some of the incredible discoveries made by NASA's Cassini probe during its amazing adventures at Saturn, and then tour the observatory and watch the stars through telescopes, compliments of the Brevard Astronomical Society. The event is free and open to the public. And for more information about the BCC Space and Astronomy Lecture Series, give them a call at 321-433-7653. That's 321-433-7653. Well, some final moments here with Leland Melvin, current astronaut with the NASA folks in Houston. And Leland, an email here with a series of questions from Jerry in Vieira. The bottom line of all these questions is basically your reaction to the news about Constellation and the budget and your thoughts about your future as an astronaut and the future of your colleagues. And by the way, we had some interesting words from NASA Administrator Charlie Bolden at a press conference this morning where he's coming to see you guys after this launch to talk about all that and ask you some honest questions. But curious again, what's your overall reaction, maybe personally, professionally?
Well, Jim, you know, I've been in the Corps. I've been with NASA for 21 years now, and I've seen a lot of different changes. They even worked on the X-33 program that was canceled, you know, supplying fiber optic sensors. And, you know, we have this vision from our president, which has trickled down to our management, and we're here to implement that. And, I watched and looked at the Ares program as it went along. We had some, you know, some successes. But if this is what we're planning to do as a civilization, to go to the next step, you know, building new propulsion systems, hopefully that can maybe take us to Mars and other destinations. If this is what our country wants us to do, then this is what we'll be doing. And personally, you know, I've had two space flights. I've looked at long-duration space flight, but right now I'm going to be heading up to Washington, D.C. to work education outreach at headquarters. So at least for the next year or two, I'll be trying to get kids excited and motivated about math and science so that we will have more engineers to help build these new vehicles and these new rocket systems.
Absolutely a key thing. In fact, I was reading a history of James Webb, the second NASA administrator, how important he felt education was because NASA needs kids to study technology and engineering and math and the whole STEM thing, as it's called now. One of the parts of this looking to the future, talking about flying on commercial rockets. I don't know, when you talk about man rating something. Maybe you can give us a 30-second primer on what does it mean to man rate a rocket. What needs to be done to a rocket to make it for humans to fly on it.
Well, I guess, you know, for human rating something, you're ensuring that the systems have levels of redundancy that if malfunctions and things do happen, that the human being inside will survive. And, you know, we're looking at other systems, escape systems for, you know, getting us off the stack if something happens down below it, as compared to what we have now with the shuttle, where we're kind of commingled with the SRBs and other parts of it. We don't have a way to get out. So having something human-rated as well as having something that has an escape capability so that you can't get out if something bad happens.
Well, and going back to what we're talking about, what future of direction, I'm glad you're going up to Washington. One of the things that Charlie Bolden said this morning in a question from Robert Perlman, which, by the way, is a quick sidebar. Robert Perlman from Collect Space, nation's one of the leading experts on space memorabilia, one of the few guys that can out-trivia me in terms of space, and I salute him for it. he asked the administrator the question about the future of the astronauts. And one of the things that Charlie said, which was interesting, and it gets back to your decision, is that a lot of guys in the office don't necessarily want a six-month stay on the space station. Some of the guys that have been around for shuttle for a while don't necessarily want to stick around. Others want to be involved in the new thing. I mean, astronauts are not just one cookie-cutter guy. You're all different personalities with different goals and different aspirations. And so, you know, Charlie was basically saying it'll kind of work itself out in terms of the future of the astronauts.
Right. And, you know, right now the core, the size of the core, I think we have about 85 people in the core, and that core size is probably a little large when we retire the shuttle, because the flying will be on the Soyuz, and that rotation will be much smaller. So I think, like Charlie said, it will all work itself out, and we'll have to work the new programs and try to get us out of low Earth orbit.
Yeah.
That's, you know, we've been there for a while. The station will be continued till 2020 now. But how do we get to that next big payoff, Moon or Mars? And I'm looking forward to
it. Now you're going to Washington to do the education thing. Any thoughts that you might fly again and do that long tour of duty?
Well, right now, you know, I'll be there for maybe a year or so, and we'll try to figure out what's my next step. I'm looking at, you know, family and other things down the road too, not just flying in space, but mm-hmm. How can I best make an impact to get, you know, that next generation of explorer up there and get them excited, because we have a huge problem right now with getting kids turned on to math and science. And if I can help them see that they have technology in their hands that require mechanical engineering, chemical engineering, polymer science in their iPods and their iPhones and all these, you know, technological devices that we've helped develop, then they can not just be users of a device, but be developers. And they always want to know, how do I get paid?
That's right.
One way to do it.
That's right. That's great. Okay, let's wrap up with you, sir, with the most controversial question of the day. Former NFL player turned astronaut, make your pick, sir. the New Orleans Saints or the Indianapolis Colts?
I have one word to say, one phrase to say.
Yeah.
Who dat? I'm going with the Saints. They're the underdogs, it seems like, but I'm all for the underdog, and I do believe that they've got what it takes to rise to the occasion, and that's who I'm picking.
That's great. Well, the Saints maybe are destined to win. They certainly beat my Vikings by a coin toss, and maybe if it was a space coin, it would have come up a little bit different.
But
anyway, Leland, thanks for being with us, and we hope to see you again. And again, good luck in your efforts to continue to motivate and inspire our kids. I think it's an absolute great story that you have, and you're a great motivator. And again, I just applaud everything that you're doing. Good job.
And, Jim, thank you for doing what you're doing to get the message out to everyone that needs to hear this.
And, by the way, Leland Melvin has a Facebook, Friends of Facebook, 540 members on the fan club page for Leland Melvin. Very cool. Leland, take care, okay?
Thanks, Jim.
All right, good.
Bye-bye.
Well, look, next week we're going to spend the hour digging into our proposed NASA budget, get some different perspectives and updates on the topic. So far, our guests are going to include U.S. Congresswoman Susan Cosmos, whose district includes the Kennedy Space Center. She's come out strongly against the president's plan, despite being of the same political party. And it'll be interesting to see what kind of plan Congress might be willing to pass if it's not totally aligned with the president's wishes. Also joining us will be Marcia Smith, formerly with the National Research Council and the Congressional Research Service in Washington. She is a longtime space policy observer that was required to produce objective nonpartisan reports about space. She now runs her own website, aptly named spacepolicyonline.com. Well, stay tuned for a coverage of the launch of Endeavor tomorrow morning, 4 o'clock. I'll be here, and we'll bring you the coverage all the way through the launch at 4:39 in the morning. And Wednesday launch shot will probably be online as well, about 5 minutes before the liftoff. Don't forget to keep an eye on the field Sunday night for the Super Bowl coin toss. We want the flip to come up heads so we can see the two football helmets and imagine one of them was the Vikings. Oh, well. Round one of the NFL draft, 75 days away. This is Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Behnke, and you're listening to WMMB.